Hello, and welcome to Tech Talks, Automotive Trends presented by Hella. I'm Ben Cohn, the Head of Sales Excellence and Marketing at Hella, and I will drive us down this road of automotive conversation. We will talk to many people from all around the automotive industry about major trends from their unique perspectives. In today's episode, we talk to Carolyn Sauer from Misch Auto. We dive into things like electrification and diversity initiatives. But before we start, I would ask you to please subscribe to this podcast wherever you are listening to it. And well, if you really do like it, how about you give us a nice review as well? Well, today I'm joined by Carolyn Sauer, the Senior Director of Misch Auto. So Carolyn, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So I'd like to start every episode just by asking, what was the first car you had?
The first car that I had was a polyester blue four-door Tempo.
Ooh, that must have drove all the kids at school crazy.
Yeah, it was super snazzy. The worst thing I think about getting that as my first car, first of all, I was grateful to have a car because my parents got it for me, but they typically, you know, would change out their vehicles every couple of years. So it was actually more fun driving, you know, my dad's Cougar or my mom's Probe, as opposed to my pretty blue Tempo. So, you know, I had gotten used to kind of the speed and the style of those other vehicles. And then I was just like, oh, but it was the first car.
So no,
it got me where I needed to go.
No longing for the Tempo anymore then.
Yeah. When I was 19, I upgraded for, a car that was red and had a V6. So that was better. I can't think of what the name of it was. Oh, Contour. It was a Contour. They only had that brand out for a short time, but then it had a moonroof and it had a little power to it. So that was a little bit better for me.
Nice. Well, then jumping from your Tempo to your Contour, what made you get into the auto industry?
So the auto industry has always been in my family. You know, my dad worked for Ford. I had uncles that worked for GM and Chrysler. And it was always in our blood. It was always a topic of conversation at family gatherings and holidays. When I first started out my career, I actually worked at Kmart headquarters because I wanted to get into more of the retail side. And I found that it just wasn't the right environment for me, and it wasn't that exciting. So I actually then made the conscious decision to get specifically into automotive and worked with a recruiter, started looking at some different suppliers that were looking for salespeople, and then ultimately landed my first automotive job at North American Lighting, where I stayed for 15 years.
Well, okay. But I'm more curious, what were those conversations around the holiday tables that involved automotive? Were people talking about what cars they were working on, or was it they were talking the industry overall? Was there fight between the GM and the Ford people at the same table?
Yeah, I don't want to divulge all my family secrets, but I will say there was always a little bit of controversy, a little bit of poking at each other about, you know, which brand was the better brand and you know, the types of jobs that they were doing. So it was animated discussion, I'll say that.
Fair enough. We won't ask you to go too far into it.
Okay.
So then today you're the senior director at Misch Auto. So what is Misch Auto and what do you do there?
Misch Auto is essentially the voice of the automotive and mobility industry across the state of Michigan. And our mission is to promote, retain, and grow what we believe to be our signature industry in the state. And we do that through a couple of different ways. We do that through CEO convening, advocacy, talent attraction and industry awareness, next generation mobility and research. And so I, as the senior director, get to work in each of those different pillars to, you know, keep our industry moving forward. I support, you know, development of the different programming that we do, supporting the events, and really engaging directly with our investors to understand what is top of mind for them and how we can articulate plans that are meaningful to, you know, make sure that our industry is known as high tech and global and, you know, growing. and, you know, making sure that we're tying those things in with, you know, our legislation and that we're writing policies that have to do with growing the talent pool and keeping those, you know, those workers here in Michigan.
So what would you say is top of mind for the investors today?
For investors today, there are a couple of things that are top of mind. You know, the last year, obviously, we had quite a pivot with the COVID pandemic, and we went through an interesting cycle with them where first there was the concern of, you know, everything was shut down for a while, and then, you know, trying to get, you know, manufacturing plants back up and running and trying to, you know, get people back to work. So there was a lot of work and effort that was done on that, where, you know, we approached Governor Whitmer's office or wrote her letters, you know, indicating that it was really important for the automotive industry and the supply chain to be able to open up at least a couple of weeks in advance of the OEM so that we could, you know, get supply ready. So that was one major thing this last year. And now going into this new year, you know, that continues to be top of mind, getting people back to work, because there still is a lot of fear out there. And there have been some government programs that have kind of incentivized staying home. So there's really just getting that full workforce back in action, because the demand did not fall off as much as it was expected last year. And you know, the industry is still moving forward and a lot of vehicles are being sold. So we really just, you know, they need people to be in those roles making, you know, production.
In fact, in the U.S. market, I think that SUVs and pickup trucks are selling like there almost was no tomorrow. Everybody seemed to be picking one up as soon as they could. And dealers seem to be having trouble some days.
Yeah, they absolutely are. And I think, you know, that's something that we're seeing because of the trend of that was caused by COVID. I mean, a lot of people aren't wanting to travel by air. There were limitations on air travel. And so, you know, if you're going to be working remotely and using your vehicle more as a pleasure vehicle or for travel or things like that, you know, the SUVs and the trucks are really made for that type of environment. You can, you know, go on all kinds of road trips when you're prepared, you know.
So does that mean you have your bug out location ready to go?
You're going for all the dirt today, Ben. I will not divulge that location, but maybe.
That's smart. That's very smart of you. So other, besides the, you know, the COVID, which impacted everybody in kind of the immediate time frame and maybe, you know, the next year or two going forward, you know, being at Mich Auto and talking to the supply base, the legislature, the OEMs, what are kind of the overall automotive trends that, you know, you're really seeing and hearing and getting involved in?
Probably the biggest trend right now is all things related to electrification and EVs. So, you know, for the last several years, we've been hearing a lot about connectivity and autonomous driving and electric vehicles. And, you know, electric vehicles are somewhat popular within a certain population, and we see some growth there. But I think really with the change in the political administration, under Biden, I think we're going to see a lot more related to incentives, a lot more related to the correct infrastructure for EVs. And we're also seeing a lot of OEMs make some pretty big commitments to, you know, changing over their manufacturing plants and investing, you know, money into making more and more electric vehicles. So I feel like that's something that is really going to take off more in, you know, in the coming years as we get things in place to enable it.
Now, with electric vehicles in the past, the anxiety on the consumer side was usually on how far can I actually drive before this thing goes out because it's hard to recharge. Do you think that now with a lot of people working from home, whether they continue to work 100% remote or even, you know, still work slightly remotely, do you think that range anxiety goes away because people aren't driving as far as they normally were? So like the commute is kind of less and they're staying more within their general bounds of the community?
That's a really good question. I haven't I haven't really evaluated that. I think my gut reaction is that there's still going to be some level of fear and anxiety associated with holding the charge. But I think what will make people more comfortable is when the infrastructure for it expands and you start to see charging stations become more commonplace. I mean, you're not going to see one at every gas station, but at least to have them more frequently, you know, on road trips or across highways, to have more of those options available for charging will help with that mindset.
So I read recently that the Midwest states are in some sort of a consortium together to kind of pull together that kind of infrastructure. Do you see that that's what it's going to take? It's going to take the government and private industries to kind of come together and leverage the massive size and money to be able to put in the infrastructure to, you know, be able to handle all these new EVs on the road?
Definitely. I think this is a game changer for how we live and how we get from place to place. And it really needs to be a all hands on deck discussion to make sure that, you know, policy is aligned with, you know, what we're doing with EVs, that the infrastructure is there. All of those decisions, all of those investments. You know, if I'm an OEM, I don't want to invest big dollars in something that isn't going to be supported ultimately, you know, by our government or, you know, with the people that need to put the infrastructure in place. So I see this as a really positive step that, you know, everyone's starting to kind of get in sync and get on the same page with, you know, not will this happen, but how do we make this happen?
And that's kind of the final push that it needs is now we've bought in. So it's going to happen. Just how do we make it happen?
Exactly.
So you were saying earlier that when, you know, you dumped the Tempo and upgraded to the Contour, you specifically mentioned that it had a bigger engine and it was a little more fun to drive. Now, how do you see EVs being fun to drive? You know, there's obviously the differences between like the Tesla, the Ford Mach-E, and then the Chevy Bolt. And so do you think that funness still needs to be there for the general consumer?
I think for a lot of consumers, it really does. So what I didn't share is that once I got rid of the Contour, I went to a Mustang convertible. And I've always been a Mustang girl. I loved that car and I should have kept it, but had to sell it and get something sensible when I had my daughter. So I'm counting down right now to my midlife crisis so that I can go and get another one. But I honestly have my eye on the Mach-E because I think if I were going to do something in the electric vehicle range, you know, I want it to be still fun. I like going on a road trip. I like just getting in the car, blaring music, you know, drinking my coffee and, you know, seeing where it takes me. So for me, that fun aspect of driving is more important than, you know, just being able to get place to place. And I think, you know, and being in Detroit, there are so many car enthusiasts that think that same way, that, you know, the sooner we can replicate that experience in EVs, the sooner they will take off.
And do you think it's the job of the OEMs to message not only the environmental benefits, but the fun that an electric engine kind of brings you, because you get that immediate sense of torque as soon as you hit the gas pedal, you're going. Do you think that's something that could even further push people into thinking about EVs, let alone buying them shortly?
Absolutely. I think it's a big decision. I think a lot of times when people are going to buy vehicles, I mean, you see how people drive in this area. You have to be a little bit aggressive. And if your car doesn't have that pickup, you know, you're kind of left by the wayside. So I feel like the OEMs and suppliers that are enabling the production of EVs both really have a marketing responsibility to the consumer to promote what the vehicle is actually capable of and to continue to make it more consumer focused and make, you know, things more integrated, make it more interesting, more fun to drive. So yes, I do see that.
Now with the pickup trucks in the EV space, there's a lot of new players out there. Do you think that will eventually just work itself out? Or do you see that the EV space is actually going to keep its doors open to have a lot of new competition in the OEM space?
I think we're starting to see a little bit of new competition. I think that's going to continue because for, you know, people that have been in automotive for a long time, that are interested in really pushing these new trends, some of them are breaking off from the traditional OEMs that are working on these products. And I think it's kind of a race right now, you know, a race to market to see who can come up with, you know, the best EV and sell the most EVs. And so we're seeing, you know, things like Lordstown Motors pop up and Rivian. And, you know, of course, there's still Tesla there. And it really wouldn't surprise me to see a few more pop up that just, you know, want to focus on a very clear brand message around maybe a family of two or three vehicles as opposed to an entire, you know, lineup.
That's really interesting. So kind of keep it more focused. It's okay now to be a little bit more niche and really focus your efforts. And especially now as technology changes so quickly, you can really, you know, put that into just a few cars versus an entire huge lineup or multiple brands of lineups.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, the people that have been in automotive for a while have learned that, you know, sometimes it's necessary to do that product consolidation to improve efficiency. And I think if you're just, you know, you're focusing on a couple of key products, you're able to get, you know, cost leverage out of that. And also, you know, a very clean quality push on your family of products.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Now, moving away maybe from a little bit of the technical speak, what are, you know, other trends that you're maybe seeing, maybe here, you know, focused in Michigan? You know, last year in 2020, we saw a lot of, politics, a lot of human rights movements. Do you see that those diversity and engagement, you know, initiatives are starting to move their way more into the automotive industry? Not to say that they weren't there before, but has it bubbled up a little bit more and making a louder voice to make some change?
So I think it's definitely no secret that automotive has been behind when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion. And there is definitely a concerted effort right now that was, you know, stemmed from some of the injustices we saw last year to really change that environment. And I'm seeing this mostly through, you know, Mich Auto and Cadia worked together and launched recently a CEO Coalition for Change, where we worked with several CEOs. We have 11 founding CEOs as part of this group. And we're really trying to figure out what is the best way to make long-term sustainable change. I think in the past, there have been efforts towards, you know, window dressing and making things look good and reporting metrics and doing things in a certain way. But they really haven't, you know, there hasn't been that real push behind sustainable change. And honestly, I think to survive as an industry or a company in this climate, there's definitely a need for that. And, you know, that's one thing that was really cool about this particular group of CEOs. All of them said the same thing. Like, we don't want to just say we're doing something. We don't want to report something. And so, you know, we're working from this model of where actionable change can actually take place.
But if they don't want to just say that they're doing change and actually want to do the change, how are they holding themselves accountable to that change? Or how are you at Mich Auto are coming up with ideas? You know, are they tying it to their performance reviews or their bonuses? Are they tying it to different kind of metrics to really hold themselves accountable, or are we not there yet? We're still in the building phase.
So what Cadia presented is actually a 5-level matrix, you know, where every company can start where they're at. So there are some companies that really have never given any thought to how to be diverse. There are other companies that, you know, are exemplary and it's integrated into their culture and that's just how they operate. So the premise behind the CEO Coalition is that each organization will pick 2 areas where they feel like they can start impacting change in their organizations and report out on those and work from those. So there's a variety of different things that these companies are picking. Some of them are related to, some are related to, performance reviews or cultural change in mindset. Others are related to recruiting efforts. You know, where are you going to recruit from? What type of skill sets are you looking for? Are you being open in your hiring processes and things like that? So there are a lot of different ways around talent and people and recruitment and retention that really can impact the overall, social atmosphere in those communities.
Now, talking about talent, do you see that the maybe one of the benefits of this last year is that, old companies realized it actually is okay to work remotely and things can still get done? Do you think that the recruiting network can now actually expand beyond people who live in, southeastern Detroit for most of these big OEMs and find the talent elsewhere who may still be interested and perfect for these roles and be able to expand on the diversity using remote working?
Yes, I definitely see a shift. I think that that's one of the things that's being talked about right now is, really the base for recruitment has expanded to anywhere in the world. It doesn't necessarily have to be local. You don't have to look for someone that only wants to drive 15 to 30 minutes to work. The fact that everyone went remote and most companies were seeing higher production, higher productivity, happier employees, really is something that I think we'll see going into the future, even as, the pandemic eventually subsides. I think that this will be a trend. And so, we don't have to just focus locally. We can look outside of that and really, focus on the skill sets that we're looking for as employers and, hire from anywhere.
And talking about not just focusing locally, obviously there's a lot of American brands, but there's a lot of European and Asian OEMs and suppliers who also do work here in the U.S. and specifically in Michigan. Are you seeing the same support for these kind of initiatives from the representatives of the, regional offices of these kind of companies as well?
Yeah, I think so. I think, across the board, people are recognizing that to be competitive, to be effective, they really need to change their mindset of how they're accustomed to working. And I think anyone here, with local representation is really inclined to focus that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're now beyond the point of it's just the right thing to do to now there's actually economical benefits to having diversity and inclusion. There's all these studies recently about having more women on your board actually improves the economics of your company. So I think we will see more and more of this as, it's actually an economic impact and not just a, making something look nice so that way people want to buy our product.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. So first of all, when people are saying that there should be more women on boards, I mean, I've been saying that for years. So it's exciting to see a lot more action being taken in that direction. But beyond that, there's a really good argument for return on investment in being a diverse organization. But one of the things that we've discussed even within, our CEO coalition group is, is that the biggest concern? There are companies that feel like they have to have some type of metric behind it to make it meaningful and to really measure that economic impact. But others are really saying, that shouldn't be the focus. So I think there are really kind of two camps around this. Those that are, well, what's the ROI for being more diverse? And then the other where they're saying it makes good business sense, but it's also the right thing to do. And more than just diversity of, ethnicities and different backgrounds, having diversity of thought is really what drives innovation and drives, creativity in companies. So it really is important on all of those fronts. And I think, you know, depending on the company, you can justify it however you want. You can say, yeah, it's something we need to do, or you can say we're getting some economic financial benefit from this. But I think ultimately, you know, we just need to be more open-minded as a society, as a culture, and really start embracing differences and what that means for us as a collective people.
I think that's beautifully said, and I think we're just about out of time. So what a great note to end on. But Carolyn, thank you so much for taking your time and, you know, sharing your ideas and thoughts about the trends of the auto industry with me. And if people would like to contact you or Mish Auto about learning more or what they can do to support and, you know, work on the mission together, what would be the best way to contact you?
So they can contact me through LinkedIn, or they can go to our website, mishauto.org. They can also go to DetroitDriven.us, which is a secondary website that we are using to focus on new mobility and innovation trends. So those are a couple of ways to reach out to us.
Awesome. Well, Carolyn, thank you again. It was a pleasure as always, and I'm sure we'll be hearing from you again soon.
All right. Thanks so much, Ben.